Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to today's special hour edition of Chatting with Sherry. Today we have the talented author, Peter J. Wax. He's going to be talking about several of his books and his writing experience. He's a best-selling cross-genre writer, and he's also a managing editor of Kevin J. Anderson's Woodfire Press. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you for coming back to my show.
Absolutely. It was a blast last time when Steve and I were on.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I loved having both of you. You guys were, I didn't have to worry. I knew I'd chill the whole time period.
Yeah, when we do the chatting, we can kind of go nonstop.
For people who hadn't listened to that, could you tell them a little bit about yourself and your background?
Absolutely. I like to say that I'm the most famous person that no one's heard of. A lot of my career since I was 6 years old was in the background of things. I started as a child actor and model. I was doing runway shows when I was 5 and 6. I was background and an extra for a couple movies like Revenge of the Nerds, Thunder Alley, some stuff like that. And I decided after Thunder Alley, told my mom that I wanted to tell the bedtime story instead of listen to a bedtime story, and that kind of locked the rest of my life in that moment when I was 6. I started writing almost nonstop. By the time I was 14, I was getting professionally published with science fiction in high school, short stories that were satiring the local kind of political situation for the students and the student body in Tucson, Arizona, and how they were dealing with the administration. There were a lot of trials going on. It was a turbulent time. And coming out of high school, I was working on my first novel, and I hit a little bit of a glitch there. I was working on something that was about Loki and his reintegration into modern society and stuff like that. And Neil Gaiman released American Gods, and I read it, and I looked at my manuscript, and I threw the manuscript I was working on away because I was like, wow, he wrote it better than I could. I was a young writer, yet to realize that, you know, the way each person tells the story is so completely different that it's still worth telling.
Yeah.
And so I moved on, and I started working in game design, and I actually was the lead designer for the collectible card game called Cyberpunk CCG. It was based on R. Talsorian Cyberpunk 2020 universe, and that was a big hit. That was a fun time for a while, designed a bunch of games, but kind of got bored with that and was missing writing. At the tail end of the game design, I actually went out for ABC Studios and consulted on the set of Alias for a little while about the potential of turning Alias into a collectible card game the same way that I had done for Cyberpunk. Obviously, there was never an Alias card game. My proposal was, you know, it didn't go. I said that it wouldn't make enough money for them based on, you know, what the property was worth and what the market was doing. So that game never saw the light of day, which was a little bit sad. From there, I kind of went back to writing. I realized that I was really missing putting the pen to the paper. So I started working on that again, getting short stories published, wrote a graphic novel, and that was actually a finalist for the Bram Stoker Award just a couple years ago. That was a horror piece called Behind These Eyes.
That's impressive.
It was fun. It was a learning experience more than anything for me. It was crazy to work in a new form and see what the awards were like and everything. Yeah, it was definitely different.
Yeah.
in that same time frame, I had just released my first novel, which was called Second Paradigm, and it was a rough one. I had some offers from mainstream publishing, and I had not learned an important lesson in my career yet, which is when an editor says they want changes, you do them. at the time, the catharsis for me in that novel was huge. It's a true nonlinear novel, meaning that you can break apart the chapters, reorganize them in any way, and you still get that three-act structure of build-up, conflict, and resolution. And when I submitted that, they liked my writing, but they couldn't quite wrap their heads around that. The agent I was working with and the editor that I was working with wanted me to rewrite it so that it was a linear story. And I didn't want to do that, so I actually went indie. I decided that, heck, I was going to just take it out myself. And I did, and it was really cool. I got to speak for a chapter of Mensa about nonlinear writing. I got to talk to lots of people, start to teach them about this new form of nonlinear writing that I had created. And, yeah, it was really cool. But it was also kind of brain-breaking because trying to re-engineer how a story is told is not the easiest thing. So I decided that I just wanted to have fun with my writing for a while. And I've been working in fantasy and urban fantasy and just developing worlds that are relaxing to write in. And then a couple of years ago, I met Steve Sears, and he and I just hit it off so well. So we're working on a project together called Villainy. The first book of that is actually in production right now. And I'm actually headed over to Steve later this afternoon to start working on some more chapter notes for book two of that series.
That is so cool. I read the first draft that Steve sent me. It's a really cool story. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. Thank you. I have a lot of fun writing that world with him. I don't want to spoil too much and tell people what it's about, but... It's a very cool world. It's a superhero world in which corporations have kind of latched on to the whole hero and villain thing, and they've really taken it to the next level with franchising, product placements, corporate sponsorships and spokesperson gigs, and everyone in this world is under the thumb of somebody else. So it's a very dark and very realistic, I think, world and setting. Breaking away from the traditional superheroes who, you know, do good and stand on the edge of a building with their cape flowing in the background. This is, you know, superheroes who are worried about how much market share they have. And the first story that we're telling
Superman
in that.
Doing that.
Yeah, right.
Should I save that building? Will I get enough press?
Wait a minute. That banner they're flying, that's not one of my sponsors. It is that kind of world, yeah.
Looks like we have a caller. Hold on just a second. Thank you for calling Chatting with Sherry. May I have your name and where you're calling from?
Steve Sears from Glendale. Can you ask him when he's going to get here?
Awesome.
Hi, Steve.
Jeez. I just got up a few minutes ago. I'm trying to clean up the guest room for this guy. Well, don't put me on the air just yet because, you know, I've got to tell the jerk he's got to get here before a certain amount of time because I've got to get work done. Go, Peter.
I hate to break your bubble, Steve. You're on the air.
Well, there goes the story of my life. Everything is in the public view.
We were just talking about your book.
I know. I heard. Wow, I didn't know we were going to do all that stuff. That's cool. Can't wait to figure it out. Yeah, no, it's a pretty awesome little world that we're trying to put together here, and yeah, it gets very exciting. Every time we get toward the end of one of the volumes, like the end of the first volume, it ended with such an uplift that I think part of the challenge is going to be trying to match that going into the next volumes and then finally getting into that final one.
Yeah, the pacing is going to be a lot of fun to figure out.
a lot of coffee houses.
Right.
Is that one of the reasons you guys are getting together right now to work some more?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Also a part of the parole, you know. Got to keep track of each other. But no, it's always better to, you know, Peter's schedule is really packed. I mean, he's doing a, as you probably already have talked about, he's doing a million things at once. And me, you know, taking all the time out from the parties and the girls. So just trying to get that time to work together, it's better that we get face-to-face. The last time Peter was out here in my environs, yeah, we spent some incredibly productive times, literally just sitting at coffee houses with our laptops, you know, and facing each other. And it becomes that big creative bouncy room that we've mentioned many times. It's just back and forth and back and forth. So this is our best productive time.
That is so cool. I'm so shocked. I didn't expect you. I'm so happy you called. I didn't expect you to call in.
I didn't either. No, I literally just I got in really late this morning. I had some friends coming in to Palm Springs, so I was visiting them. I just got back really late and woke up late. And I'd forgotten that, that Peter was going to be on the air, so I just figured, okay, right after Julian is fed, I'm going to call in and see what happens. So I don't want to take up Peter's time, though, because he's got a lot more to talk about than just villainy.
No, it's best that you called in, because God knows what I would have accidentally let slip about the universe.
Yeah.
I thought he was doing really well.
Well, I thought he was. I just heard the little snippets there as I got up, but... yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know if Peter's mentioned the ancillary markets that we're going to try to be pushing into, but...
I have not. Go ahead, Steve.
No, he has not.
This is not the Steve and Sears hour, although it could be for the right price.
Sorry, we don't have that budget, Steve.
Oh, well, another story of my life. Yeah, you keep saying that enough. We don't have that budget. You can be a studio head. Well... Peter and I have always
this studio.
Peter and I have always planned for Villainy to go into multiple venues. The project is kind of designed around that. The universe that we created is kind of designed around that. So we are exploring everything from short story anthology books, and actually the first short story did appear already in an anthology, and it was written by Mark Ryan. He did a wonderful job writing a story within our universe for another book of different anthological tales. But we've been planning that for Villainy, because the universe itself lends itself to so many stories that do not specifically deal with that one character. And we are now putting together, shall I go ahead and mention that, Peter?
Yeah, you definitely should, although I want to touch in really quickly there. One of the things that really excites me about the anthology and about Mark Ryan's piece and the forthcoming pieces is seeing the other voices and how they tell tales within the universe, because it was a very different read from what you and I are putting down, but it's still 100% the Villainy universe, the 4188
yeah.
universe.
Yeah. It very much so. Mark did a wonderful job with that story, too. I was a little hesitant because I wasn't too familiar with Mark's work. And he, you know, you'd expect with a superhero universe, it's all action and clout and everything. But Peter and I are primarily character developers. I mean, we love working with characters and putting them in situations, whether or not there's action. And so Mark wrote a really sweet story. It is a sweet story. It's not a big kick-ass
yeah.
story. It's really kind of like a little tearjerker. So he did an
excellent job.
Where's
that story located so we can read it?
I always screw up the title, so Peter, you do that one.
If you look up Purple Unicorn, it is in the Purple Unicorn Anthology. And
I actually have it here in my hand. One horn to rule them
to
all.
Rule them all.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
One horn to rule them all. And it's great because it's all about purple unicorns. And there's great writers like Todd McCaffrey, Peter S. Beagle is in that anthology. It's a fun anthology, not just for the fact that Steve and I have our universe in it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool
That's
to see
so
it there.
Cool.
But, yeah, Kevin Anderson, of course, wrote one. And, just a lot of good authors in this.
And is that something that we could pick up at a store, or is that online, or how do we get it? How do we purchase it?
I believe you can order it at retail establishments, but it is also on Amazon. It's on all the e-reader formats. It's anywhere that you go to look for it, I believe you can find it.
Cool. Because
well,
I know
anywhere
there's a lot
you go
of
to, like,
fans
can't find
are
it in a strip
going
to
want to read it.
Yeah, if you have any affectation for, like, the concept of unicorns, and when I say that, I kind of slow down when I say it because people automatically think of the horse with the one horn, but that has to be included. But I think the rule on writing these, as I've read through the stories, is that somehow the writer had to tell a tale but include a purple unicorn. And
yes.
It isn't necessarily the big horsey that runs into the field.
Correct.
It can be metaphorical, it can be literal. So that's all I want to say about it, because the stories are really delightful.
It sounds like it's my cup of tea.
You probably would like it quite a bit, yeah. But on with that, we're also planning our own series of anthology books within this universe. Ones, you know, books that are dedicated completely to it. And then the other area that we are now exploring very actively is a graphic novel, which everybody is doing, of course. But we have a very interesting story to tell in one specific graphic novel. And we're kind of touching around with it right now, talking to some artists, doing our development on it. We have an overview story at the moment, and that's one of the other things we'll be discussing while Peter's out here.
Cool. Cool. That is really exciting. I mean, I know a lot of fans are going to really be excited about that.
I hope so.
I hope so. We're pretty
excited.
Hello?
Did I just put you guys both to sleep at the same time?
You know, yeah, it's been something since the get-go. When we were here on your show last time, we talked about the fact that Villainy was going to be multimedia, that we were going to be putting all these different things out. So working on this is very exciting for us, and we really are hoping that the fans love it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
me
kind
too.
Of a fait accompli whenever somebody says, you know, hopefully the fans will love it. I always try to process it in my mind. I'm like, well, you know, well, certainly we want to have fans, so we want to please our particular followers. We also want people who are not fans at the moment to become fans. We want people who will never become fans to still buy the book so they can hate us at least once but pay for it to do it.
Yes.
Oh, my God, I can relate to that.
Such an eloquent statement.
That's the business side.
Eloquent statement.
Oh, my God, that is so funny. But I was saying to Peter before you called in, I read that first draft you sent me, and I really loved that, so I'm sure I'm going to love the updated version of it.
The first draft of
Villainy.
Oh, Villainy, yeah. Oh, yeah, and that first draft, we've revamped that quite a bit. So, well, of course, that's kind of bad to say. You say you loved it, and I say, oh, we changed it all. no, we tightened it up, and we made
for
it
the better. For the better.
Much, much, much for the better. Yeah, all the elements are still there, but you read an editor's version, so we were doing some work on it at the time, and it starts off running and kind of keeps going.
Well, that makes it a page turner, and I love that. That's one of the reasons I loved it.
Well, the thing I really like is because we had when we finished the second version of it. I'm sorry, the first version, the editor's. Review, you weren't the only person who had looked at it and reviewed. We had some other people, and another person I knew wanted to read it. So he read it, and he had some interesting input and critiques, which matched what we kind of thought. But it was the ending that I thought was very interesting. I wanted to see his reaction to that. And we were going to a Kings game, actually. Yay, Kings, hockey, something I recently gotten into because of Dennis and Sarah, my friends. And Dennis had read the book. And as we were just walking down the aisle, the big hallway, heading to our seats, suddenly Dennis turns to me and goes, "You've got to tell me what happened. What happened?" Because he had read the end of the book. And he said, I have to know about this. And that was actually very, very satisfying for me, because it means that the impact of the end had exactly the effect that that we wanted.
Yeah, I wanted to know too, but I was too shy to ask you.
Well, hopefully pretty soon we'll all know.
You mean exactly. You guys don't know either?
Oh, no, we do. We
know.
Okay. What's kind of cool about it is that it's, let's see, can't give too much away, but yeah, there's a lot that happens at the end of the first book that absolutely tosses everything around. And then in the opening of the second book, it's a continuation of that, but everything's changed. Everything has changed. So just when you think you're settling down with some stuff, suddenly, you know, somebody picks up your world and shakes it, shakes it, shakes it. So watching how it settles out is what launches the next volume.
That is really cool. It sounds fun. I can't wait to see the new version.
Yeah, same here, because that'll mean it's done.
Same here.
So I'm just, like I said, I'm kind of... I'm happy, but I was not, I sent Peter. I sent Steve a note, just letting him know that you're on the show. You know, put a little thing up. I didn't know he was going to call in.
Oh, it's a fantastic surprise. I knew about the Palm Springs thing. I actually was considering calling him and waking him up, but I figured I'd let him sleep since, you know, I'm going to be keeping him busy as of later this afternoon.
Yeah, that's true.
But.
Yeah, we're busy. We're going to Roscoe's Waffle and Chicken House later on. That's real busy.
Right.
I've never been there. It'll be fun. I have not been there. That's going to be interesting.
You've never been there?
No. All the time I've been out here, there's the one on, Gower, that it's always got a line, and the parking is horrendous around there. So I've never gone to that one, even when I lived in Hollywood. But there's apparently one in Pasadena that I passed by, so... We're gonna try to hit that one. I mean, I've had, you know, waffles and chicken individually and together, but not with someone named Roscoe overlooking me.
I've been there, but Roscoe was never overlooking me, so I think you're safe.
Oh, I want to see Roscoe.
I've never had the particular combination of waffle and chicken, so this will be an interesting experience any which way I cut it.
Waffles, chicken, and honey. You have to put honey on it as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We're going to
okay.
be fat boys in the in about a week.
Well, if you go every day. But we're giving it a nice plug.
We'll find out. That's right. Yeah,
right.
A nice plug right now.
Yeah.
So, Peter, what else have you got working on?
Roscoe.
I feel like I stepped right into the middle of your interview. Peter has a lot of his own fans who are sitting out there tapping their fingers very quietly saying, okay, all right, move on.
Well, we were going to be talking. We still have time. Don't worry. It's got a half hour. But we are going to talk about his book, Bloodletting.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I have that on my bed table, actually.
And we're going to talk about tie-ins, media tie-ins. And that's the type of stuff we were going to talk about. Do you approve, sir?
Me? Well,
yeah.
I'm in the middle of feeding Julian, so fine. Do whatever.
Give Julian a kiss for me.
Oh, everybody says to do that, and it always results in fur in my teeth, but sure.
For my audience who doesn't know, Julian is his beautiful dog who everybody who meets that lovely face falls in love with him.
he has an online following. Julian Warrior Puppy is his name. In fact, he's texting me right now, so we'll see if that ends up on the on my Facebook. Probably will.
And that's the real secret is that, yeah, it'll be nice to go out and work on Villainy with Steve, but I'm going out to actually see Julian.
Of course.
Actually, the cool thing about it is when we go to the coffee house is I get to bring Julian along with us. So, you know, he's our little furry muse.
And he probably sits there and says, okay, you're doing it all wrong. Please. You know,
no, he pretty much just kind of,
you know,
he flops himself down and stares at people while I try to type. He will correct a few of the superhero mistakes because, of course, he is a superhero.
Superhero. Mm-hmm. sweetest dog ever.
But go ahead with Peter, please, because like I said, I feel guilty just for taking away that time. He's got so many cool things going on, and you should talk about bloodletting. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that was my next subject. Steve, please stay. You can add your two cents if you'd like.
Just ignore any sounds of water running in the background, so just go ahead and talk.
Okay.
Fair
Peter,
enough.
Why don't you tell the audience about your book, Bloodletting?
All right. Bloodletting is, it was a really fun project. It was, it actually came about because of my work with Steve. Mark Ryan, who wrote the villainy piece for us, was joking around with me, and he was like, hey, I'm jealous. You're co-authoring with, like, Steve, with Kevin Anderson. When are we going to write a book together? And in fairly typical me fashion, I said, okay, what do you want to write? Because, you know, I never say no to a project, except I've learned to over the last year.
So much for me feeling special. Go on, please.
Right? But, I mean, I've been working with Ryan and his writing for something like 5 years, He's come so far that it actually sounded like a lot of fun to work with someone who was formerly a student. And he wanted to write a fantasy because he has a deep love for epic fantasy. And I've always been intrigued by epic fantasy. And the kind of meeting of the minds that we went through was I had this magic system that I wanted to play with, this idea where everyone in a world, every sentient being can use magic. And so we kind of hammered out that setting where we have this unique world where everyone can use magic. But of course, it came down to the characters and what we wanted to do with them. And that was where we ended up having a whole lot of fun. The book is about a twin brother and twin sister, Tetra and Hallie, who get violently separated very early on in the book. That is basically the inciting incident of what kicks the story off. And the whole book is about their struggle to each rescue the other. We played around with the twin bond and the fact that they can sense each other. We were able to amplify that using the magic of the world. And it's this emotional and physical journey for them of trying to heal and figure out how to get out of their situation so they can go rescue their twin. It's not your typical epic fantasy. We really went in and even though there is a larger meta story and, you know, this world-changing stuff that's going on, we really focused in on what these two kids are feeling and how they're reacting to it. One of my favorite things to cite is that we came to a situation for one of the characters where it was just everything was so miserable that we actually had to write a scene where this character is trying to figure out if they want to just end it all or not, because they're having trouble continuing to move forward. And that is really going to be a theme moving forward past bloodletting, because it's actually bloodletting part one of the affinities. And there are several books planned for the affinities, bloodletting part one and part two, and then the working title for the second book right now is Tides of Sorrow. And it's going to be following these characters through that emotional growth from being 16-year-olds. And it's actually, we have it charted all the way until they're in their mid-30s. So it's a fairly large story surrounding the growth of these kids. And, yeah, I'm loving writing it a lot more than I expected to.
Wow. Sounds like real emotional journey. And that's really the coolest thing to write. I'm excited. I want to read it. I'm already interested.
I'd like to hear that.
It's very intriguing.
Well, part one has been out since March. It's been doing really well. Part two is coming out this coming March, April. It's spring. I apologize, I don't have my calendar in front of me. But, and I may be having more stops in California because Ryan is actually, Mark Ryan is moving from Kansas to California. So I may be coming out here and heading up to San Francisco at some point to work on books with him as well.
Another lovely city.
See, I strip away the pieces of special bit by bit, right, Steve?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I'm surprised you're not co-authoring a book with a barista over at Starbucks.
Yeah, about that.
Oh, yeah, that's the next project. You blew it, Steve.
Yep. No, Mark's a really good writer, and there's a certain natural laws of nature will take effect because eventually Peter will just fall over, and there will be a vacuum in the space of the literary world for others to fill.
Well, that's why I learned to say no over the last year.
Poor Peter.
You learned to say no?
I have. I've got four projects I'm working on this year. That's it. I'm working on Villainy with you. I'm working on the secret one with Kevin. I'm working on Bloodletting with Mark Ryan. And I'm working on my personal secret one, which I'm bringing
blood.
Character proofs and art up to you, Steve, so that you can see this other project.
Okay. So that, of
that's
course,
intriguing.
And those are those projects, not including all the editing duties and all the books you have taken on to do that, and of course the responsibilities with the publishing company and life in general.
Yeah,
you do have
like
a personal life, right, Peter?
I do have what?
You do have a personal life, right?
I'm not familiar. Could you define that for me?
Yeah. Be careful. Other people are listening.
I guess
no, I
that answers the question
on.
In itself.
Yeah. Doesn't everybody have the internet?
I realized early on that I could write or I could have personal relationships and sleep. Obviously, I chose writing.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of backed into it without choice.
That's interesting.
Yeah, your origin story as a writer is pretty awesome too, Steve.
What, having no social life before I had to write? Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I come into it from a completely different standpoint, but no, you've been a dedicated author, so well, other areas as well, but that's an area that you've made your forte.
I've certainly tried.
You were saying that second Paragon, I can't talk to the other book.
Paradigm?
Yeah,
thank
you. Think of 2 10-cent pieces of paradigms.
Paradigm. I'm not very well today. What you said that was your first book, but is it something you're still working on? I'm a little confused by that.
No, second Paradigm is done. Wordfire Press picked it up and reissued it recently from the indie version. So I got to do an author's preferred version of it where I went in and I did some rewrites and I adapted my style because it was 8 years old at that point. My writing had changed quite a bit, and it's still not the book that I would write in modern times, but it is definitely something I can be proud of as a first book and say, yeah, look at that. So it's done. I may revisit the plot structure for a sequel someday, but it is so time intensive that I haven't made the decision for when that is going to happen.
So that book is out. Bloodletting, the first part, is out. When is the second part coming out? You said it was going to come out in March or April for Bloodletting?
It should be March or April. It's late spring, early summer is when part two of Bloodletting is coming out.
Okay. I just want to reiterate so people who want to buy the books know when they're available and everything. The other thing you wanted to talk about was your media tie-ins. Can you explain how they work? And I mean, the list of them is pretty long.
Well, the a lot of the media tie-ins that I'm working with, it's not necessarily my name that goes on them, or their old stuff, but I wanted to actually spotlight Kindle World. As much as there is conflict in the community about Amazon online retailing, things like that, Kindle World has done something kind of spectacular. And I was one of the authors that got lucky enough to get to work with them to kind of show other writers that this was a cool platform. There was a group of us that they brought on to do that. And I got to work in the Veronica Mars universe, and I got to work in the G.I. Joe universe because of Kindle Worlds. And first, about the program, what it is something where anybody can write a piece of fan fiction in a universe, or a piece of fiction that is aimed at growing that universe, and then submit it to Kindle Worlds, and if the Kindle Worlds editors say, yep, this is good enough, in it goes. They're actually looking for writers who used to just write fan stuff to bring them into the professional format, because you write a piece, you get your royalties, everything like that. It's actually, for the universes that they have licensed, a much broader platform to find fiction off of old television properties. Mm-hmm.
This is open to anybody that writes fan fiction?
It is. Yes, it is open to anybody. Anybody can write a piece and submit, and so long as you follow the guidelines and your writing is halfway decent, they're gonna upload it for you. And if there is something wrong with it, they're going to tell you what's wrong with it so you can fix it. Their goal is not to be
cool.
A gatekeeper, but rather to be an enabler. It is really cool. It's something that I love, and I love their program and what they're doing with it. I think it's spectacular to try and get the writing of fiction into a broader platform and to actually get people paid for it.
That is really amazing. I know a lot of fan fiction writers who would be very interested. The ones you gave me were G.I. Joe, Post Traumatic Stress Commander, Veronica Mars, Best Times of Richmond High, and Neptune High. Is there more than that, or is that the ones that are licensed?
There are those two, and then there are more Veronica Mars pieces on the way. There's a Kevin J. Anderson Kindle Worlds book called Twist that I had a hand in helping with as well. But the two that I love are, of course, those first two that came out with my name on them, because I love seeing my name on books. It's awesome. It's gratifying. but I really liked what my co-authors and I did. That was a case where I had no time, and I actually originally really wanted to work with the program, but I my schedule was too full. But before the window closed and I actually told them I couldn't, a couple of friends in the writing community came up to me and said, hey, I know you're really busy. You should really do this. I'll co-author with you to help reduce the amount of time that you're spending, so that you can still seize this opportunity. So to David Boop and to Aaron Michael Ritchie, a huge thank you for actually relieving my time so that I could do those projects. But the G.I. Joe one, Post Traumatic Stress Commander, Aaron Ritchie and I sat down, and I wanted to do a satire. I wanted to do something that embraced the G.I. Joe universe, but more like the cheesy old cartoons, because I grew up on those. And I wanted to get that level of humor into it inside of a satire. So what we ended up doing was taking one of the really just musclehead G.I. Joe guys named Gung Ho and putting him across from Cobra Commander, the true, like, over-the-top villain. And we took away all their weapons and we put them in group therapy together trying to deal with PTSD.
Wow. That's really that's a really cool idea.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a lot of fun. We're getting a lot of compliments, a lot of people who think the story is just hilarious, but that it has a really important message as well, that it has impact and comedy all kind of wrapped up in one. So I really feel like we did manage to hit a home run in writing about a very sensitive subject and dealing with it with comedy.
That is so cool. That really is. But I was wondering, can you, like, Veronica Mars is hot right now because they're going to make, do they already make a movie or they're making a movie?
Yes,
after
they
the
already made a
Kickstarter
movie.
Campaign. Does that increase the visibility of something
really
like
does.
That?
It really does. We have noticed in the sales trending for, it's Veronica Mars, Fast Times at Neptune High. And,
oh, no, I messed it up. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. We have definitely noticed that the Marshmallows, the Veronica Mars fans, have really embraced the Kindle Worlds platform, and we see that story goes out a lot, and we're happy to see so many people reading it and enjoying it. You know, there are some incredibly diehard fans that have gone in and said, well, there's a couple sentences here and there that we don't really think Veronica would have said. But other than that, it's almost like it's an alt-universe Veronica Mars. Like, the voices are just so eerily accurate. And that's huge praise. When a hardcore fan goes in and gives you, you know, says something like that, that is nothing but a huge thank you. You know, we worked really hard to capture her voice, and sounds like we did a good job. And it's been steady enough, and they're supporting the book enough. That David and I are looking at going in and doing more in the same style. No, we chose a rather unique style. We're going in and we're doing what we call 0.5 episodes. With any sleuth piece, there's always the point in the episode or the book or whatever where a sleuth talks about this other case that they worked, or that other case that they worked, or this other thing that's happening in the background that they're working on at that moment, but that's not part of the feature. So what we're doing is we're going in with the 0.5 episodes, and we're writing all of those pieces that are mentioned or things that are happening in the background of the primary episodes.
That is something that I am very interested in. I mean, I know that there are other fans out there who probably will be too. That's really exciting. And I didn't even know that that was an open field. I had never heard of that before. As a fan fiction writer, I'm fascinated and interested, actually.
It is, and it's a great opportunity. It's, you know, because it's Kindle Worlds, the only place that you can buy the books is on Amazon. You can't get them for other readers, which kind of sucks, but you know, at least it's there. At least that platform is there, and it gives people a chance to go in and write in those universes and to get paid for them and to grow them. And I think Kindle Worlds also did a really good job in choosing the various talent they did from the professional side, because you know, bringing them in to kind of trailblaze and bringing these pros in to say, see, look, we've got pros who are writing this stuff too. It really emboldened some of the fans, which is good.
That's amazing. Steve, I have a question for you as someone who's very experienced in television production. How do you feel about that?
About the Amazon thing?
Yeah. Are you talking for Julian or yourself?
Again, such eloquence.
I know. Words are my plaything. About the Amazon situation and those type
yeah.
of things?
Well,
there's a larger question, and this gets into it. We do not have time for this discussion, nor should we. This is great for the individual artist, the individual writer, the people who have passion and want their work to be read and appreciated. It is bad overall for the profession of writing. Because basically what it comes down to, and this isn't just Amazon, this is any company, if they can monetize off of it, they'll do it. And what's happening is that you're ending up with a huge glut of material out there. So the financial pie is about the same. The way it's being divided up now is a lot smaller portions. So, you know, there's a love-hate relationship with any type of progress. And this is progress. It's, you know, forget about any kind of complaints people might have about it, it's going to move in this direction more and more. But for the individual writer whose voice needs to be heard, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
For the established writers, I mean, the whole publishing world is changing. It's, you know, it's just
really
not
is.
The way it was. It's not being controlled by a small conglomerate of people. So,
yeah.
But this is also true in film and television. It's the same thing. You know, the Internet and access to it, and everybody has a movie studio and their own computer. There's a lot of material out there. Now, the balancing to it is, no offense to everybody who is an aspiring creative person, most of it is not that good. That's just the percentages. So you do have to actually search for the really good stuff. And that's where recommendations come in. So, you know, if Peter recommends somebody, a particular author who's doing this type of fiction on Amazon, that's the first place people are going to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's very interesting. It is a wild frontier right now. And I think almost all of media is a wild frontier, even TV and as well as movies, because people, it's not just that. I mean, anybody can do a webisode, you know.
Well, that's it. And you see that, I'm sorry, go ahead, because I interrupted you, but you were on the correct track. Go ahead.
Like, you can go to a YouTube channels, and there's 2,000 webisodes to choose from. A lot of the time, you don't go by, oh, I'm going to go onto YouTube and go through 15,000 different people. You get a recommendation from a friend on Facebook, Twitter, whatever, Google Plus or something, saying, hey, this one is really good, and then you go and you check it out.
You have to.
So much.
YouTube in specific, didn't they just cross the benchmark of it would take 1 million years or something like that to actually watch every single video on YouTube? Or
I'm about halfway
years,
through. I'm about halfway through.
1 million years?
It was like it was 1,000 or a million. Either way, it was a gigantically ridiculous number.
I'm up to the G's right now, so I'm expecting over the last week, next weekend I'll be fine. I told you, that's one of my goals for this year. That's one of my resolutions, is to finish reading the Internet.
Well, good luck to you.
Quick read. Coffee table read. You can really just keep it on the phone.
But see, where it also kind of dilutes some things, and this is not complaining, this is just observational. There used to be just typing, you know, 4,000 words doesn't actually make you an author. But everybody who does it thinks they are. And in film and television, the side of that is that you run into all these people who, amazingly, they're writer, directors, producers, actors, all in one barrel. And on their resumes, it'll say, or on IMDb, it'll say short. And you realize it is kind of a YouTube thing that they put together. Expression-wise, it's great, and you find some wonderful gems out there. But the whole interaction is still trying to find itself. It's trying to define itself. I'm kind of optimistic about it, to be honest. But
I am, too. I think it's great. I think I would never have this radio show. And I have, it's one of the most amazing things that's ever happened to me is I accidentally fell into this radio show. It came through computer and media, and I have people like you, and I have a wonderful fan base. It just, you never know what's going to happen because of the media.
It also gives you the opportunity to do something that, you know, here I get to talk about the guy who said, you know, we had to walk through the snow for 40 miles to get to the school. It gives an opportunity for, you know, back in my time, if anybody wanted to be a writer or an actor or anything, you had to run the risk of everybody, and sometimes your parents saying, oh, that's nice, but hey, grow up, kid. You know, only special people do that. You're not in Hollywood. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do that. You know, a lot of negativity, and so you end up doing a job you hate for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But now you actually have an opportunity and at least a chance to be seen, to express yourself creatively. So you actually can have a real job but at the same time, you're exploring this other side of you. And you know something? For a lot of people, that's all they need. They are they're happy with that type of response and that type of access, and it makes their lives a lot less miserable. There's nothing more horrible. You know something? I shouldn't say that because I can think of a lot of things that are more horrible, but one of the worst feelings is knowing that you are a creative person and you're not allowed to be creative because you're stuck in everything else.
Yeah.
And you start to question, what in the world is this life about if I feel like I'm stuck in it? You know, there was a...
Yeah.
I forget, maybe Peter can help me. There was an author who, and I'm paraphrasing, had coined a phrase, was it Harlan? Who had a short story, I must scream, but I have no mouth. I can't think of who actually came up with that. I thought it was Harlan Ellison. But it's a paraphrase of that, but that's how I look at this. It's you have to scream, but you have no mouth. But now everybody has an opportunity to creatively, you know, scream their passions.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was one of the people stuck in a job that I wasn't very happy in. I would be sitting there doing customer service and being miserable. So
you know,
I relate to what you say.
Yeah, and it's something that affects everybody that is, I don't know, doing air quotes here, broken in on the industry that has achieved some success with their creative endeavors. They have their stories of the time when it wasn't that way. You know, to kind of lock back on what you were saying, Steve, I had someone in my life who said, okay, but this writer thing, you can't do that. If you're going to be part of my life, you have to go get a day job. It is something where until recently you didn't have a mouth. You had
Yeah. And I had people who, honestly, I didn't care about their opinions, who said the same thing toward me. But they weren't my parents. You know, I was very fortunate in that regard. I had parents who were just like, you know, you love doing this type of stuff, go and do it. And they were very much bread and butter. I mean, you know, military career man, housewife. These were your traditional, this was a traditional American family. I got a 23-year career man in the military. But when I made my decision to go off and pursue my dreams, which I don't have to put into quotes, they said... they said, you love doing that. Go give it a shot. And they supported me 100%. But a lot of people don't have that advantage.
Yeah, I had the same with my parents. My parents were always, when my mom's still, very supportive of everything I do. I mean, she doesn't really understand the computer thing, but she's very supportive. She's very supportive of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got a text message. Quick shout out to Quincy Allen. Thank you, sir. It was Harlan Ellison, Steve. It was one of his short stories, post-apocalyptic, and it won a Hugo.
Ah, there we go. Yeah, he's done a couple of things. His name gets lost every now and then, but he's done a couple of things. I don't know. I think he's worked.
He's the one who wrote the original teleplay for City on the Edge of Forever for Star Trek.
He did, and he won. I believe he won.
He won a Hugo for that too.
And Roddenberry's episode also won a Hugo because Roddenberry did a, if Harlan's listening, we will hear from him. He did a significant rewrite on that, and that was a term of a lot of controversy. But Harlan's original version is not like you're going to see on the show.
I actually love the show, loved his version. Sorry, Harlan, I love both.
Well, apparently a lot of people do. The approach, from what I understand, is you have to go into it divorcing one from the other. You just really have to.
Yeah, but I did. I loved his version, and I loved the original. And I actually, it's one of my favorite episodes.
I'm just excited that somebody texted in. You've got one listener. That's awesome.
No, I think I have more than one.
That we know of at the moment until you get back the analytics.
For everybody who's listening after the show, I find out who's listening.
That's right. Yeah, she is the NSA.
Oh, my. Deal with the double
here.
And that's another area, by the way. As authors and writers and everything, I find myself a little more antsy when I start researching things for a script like, oh, how to put together a pipe bomb.
Yeah.
There's a few keywords that you can't quite use on the internet these days, so I tend to anonymize myself a little bit when I can.
Oh, I had one of those moments. I was trying to figure out which police would protect a senator. So I was doing things like searching for how do you kidnap a senator? Which police? Do the Capitol Police do this? And I just like afterwards, I was like, God, I am so red flagged.
Well, I had to actually use an anonymizer because there was a project that I still have. And all I can tell you about it is that it required me finding a blueprint for the White House upper floors.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, and by the way, there are no blueprints for the upper floors. That's surprisingly enough, they don't want that out there. I couldn't find one,
figure.
As you would imagine it. But the lower floors.
I'm actually kind of glad that there isn't.
But it is true because of the open society we have and the infiltration of of snoopers and bots. Every once in a while, it's like, okay.
I was actually nervous doing a search because I'm writing an international thriller. I was like, I need to find out who in the Israeli police would research a murder and who would be doing good terrorist research. And I'm like, what are they going to think if they see me doing this?
Well, that's the thing. The bots are actually, this is not conspiracy and tinfoil hat stuff, although I wish I'd invested in aluminum before the last few years of crazies came to crop. There is a lot of the bots and snoopers, they look for key combinations of words. And it's not like immediately, they show up at your door and everything like that. But I don't know. I just don't want to be kind of like a little flipped switch somewhere in a database saying, keep this guy in mind for later.
Well, it's definitely a real thing. Steve Jackson, when he designed his net hacking card game, they actually got a visit from men in black suits who said, you can't publish that game because of the research he was doing on hacking.
Hmm.
Well, considering what happened at Sony, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Yeah.
Believe it or not, gentlemen, we're at the end of the show.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Oh, my.
Well, I'm going to back out of here and say, and back to Peter Wax for his wrap up and goodbye. Thank you very much, Peter. I'm on my way to get myself some breakfast because we're going to eat chicken tonight. That made no sense. Oh, and by the way, one quick thing, Peter. When you left last time, did you break my Xena mug? Somebody did. I'll find out.
Your Xena
mug? No, I wasn't using the Xena mug.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. Though she'll be an accountant.
I'm scared of the Xena mug and the chakram and touching the pretty toys that you have.
Yes. Yes. You know something? Scratch and sniff Xena scented car things. That would be kind of cool. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm waxing poetic about merchandising.
That you can work on.
Smells like gas.
Wait. Scratch and sniff Xena. Are you talking about things that smell like Grecian warrior princess?
Well,
would be the scent I want in my car.
It would actually be kind of cool if it was one of those hangers that looked like Xena, but if you scratch and sniff it smelled like Gabrielle. But that opens a whole new area of fan fiction for the Xena fans. And shout out to my Xena fans.
Dear.
There, I'm done. Thanks a lot,
Sherry. They're all calling you.
I'm going to get out of here right now. So thanks a lot, Sherry. I appreciate you letting me participate.
Thank you.
See you in a couple of hours,
calling.
Peter.
All right. See you in a few, Steve.
Bye.
Bye. In the wrap-up,
that was fantastic. I'm so glad you called in.
Me too. I was stunned. in the wrap-up, I'd like to know if you have any events that anybody can come and see you at that's coming up.
Absolutely. Over the next couple months, I'm going to be at Life, the Universe, and Everything in Provo, Utah. I am going to be at Superstars Writing Seminars, that's mainly for writers, in Colorado Springs, Colorado. The end of, this is all February stuff, at the end of February, I'm going to be at Pensacon, which is the Pensacola, Florida Comic-Con. And then after that, Emerald City Comic-Con in Seattle, and that's in March, and Kansas City Planet Comic Con in Kansas, and that's mid-March. So that's just the next couple months. Those are the appearances.
Well, I have fans in every area, so hopefully you guys will be able to visit Peter and say hi and, you know, have a chat.
That'll be fantastic.
Well, thank you, Peter, for taking part. Thank you, Steve, wherever you are, for taking part today.
out in the ether. Yes, yeah, thank you for having me on the show. It's always a blast, Sherry.
Thank you. Thank you. It was really fun. Like I said, I really want to read Bloodletting. It sounds fascinating. And I want to also read your Veronica Mars story that's on Amazon. That sounds cool, too. I'm really excited. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Anything else for your listeners, or are we good to go?
If you have any closing thing, you can say it, and then we're at the end.
It's going to be
anything
a fun year. It's going
to
be a fun year. Thank you for listening. It was great not getting to meet all of you, I guess. But just it was a lot of fun for this hour. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Peter. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.